content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. This week, we'll dig deeper into the June issue of Our State Magazine, which is their annual coastal issue featuring articles all about the coast of North Carolina. And last time, we introduced you to a Century by the Sea, a special section of four stories focused on Carolina Beach as they celebrate their centennial. And today, we will continue with the second of the four stories, and it's entitled Guardian of the Nests. Sea turtles might travel thousands of miles to lay their eggs on our shore. A longtime volunteer helps watch over their babies and guide them home to the sea. Twice a week from May through August, Nancy Busvone walks along Carolina Beach at dawn, searching for signs that a sea turtle has been ashore. If she sees the telltale tracks, she knows a nest might be nearby. The sky is a royal blue, and the sun hasn't yet peeked over the horizon when Nancy Busvone embarks on her weekly patrol to scout for sea turtle nests. On Wednesday morning, she walks along the long, undeveloped stretch of beach known as Freeman Park, scanning the sand for signs that a mother turtle has been ashore. The morning starts as beautiful as any at Carolina Beach. A gentle breeze floats in off the ocean. Anglers cast their lines into the surf. The sun rises up to meet fluffy clouds above the water. Upon reaching Carolina Beach Inlet, Busvone turns around and heads 2 miles back to the south end of the park. She hasn't found a nest, but sometimes that's how it goes. As she walks, the clouds darken. One droplet falls, then another. Suddenly, she's pelted with driving rain. Yet she trudges on. She has no jacket, no umbrella. Yet she remains unfazed. She's used to the elements on these morning patrols. When a mother sea turtle swims ashore to nest, often returning to the same area where she hatched, she faces challenges too. Lights on the beach can disorient her and cause her to return to the ocean without laying her eggs. If she does decide to nest, she'll struggle up on the beach on flippers built for swimming, not for walking on sand. At the spot where she makes her nest, she digs a hole with her hind flippers. She lays her eggs, then covers them with sand, and begins her slow crawl back to the surf. Her job as a mother is done. Her children must fend for themselves, with help from volunteers like Busvone, a member of the Pleasure Island Sea Turtle Project. We have a couple of pictures here. There's a sea turtle patrol vehicle that Nancy uses to look for sea, for up and down the beach for the sea, for signs of the sea turtle coming above. And we have a little tiny baby sea turtle that has just emerged. The nonprofit all-volunteer organization known to many as PISTP aims to further the conservation of all species of sea turtles. Its volunteers educate the public, protect and monitor nests between Curie Beach and Freeman Park, and rescue sick or injured turtles that wash ashore in those areas. When Busvone started volunteering with PISTP in 2001, it was her job to monitor nests on the brink of hatching. She remembers her first, in front of the Savannah Inn in Carolina Beach. "I got so attached to that nest," she said, "they actually gave me a room there. I lived in the Savannah Inn for a week just because I did not want to leave that nest." She checked on it every morning, then came back every afternoon to sit by it through the evening. She visited again each night, waking in the wee hours. She didn't want to miss a thing. She felt protective of the tiny babies that lay there in the sand. Friends and other volunteers came to sit with her, talking in whispers to avoid disturbing the eggs. One day, Busvone saw the sand above the nest sink down, and she knew it was about to hatch, or boil, as they say. Electric with anticipation, she called her project mentor, Nola Jackson, who came straight from church and hiked up her skirt to get down to work. Rain had just started to fall when one baby turtle, a little scout, Busovni says, poked its head out of the sand. More little heads poked out. In an instant, the whole nest boiled, all of the hatchlings spilling out at once. The volunteers helped guide the babies toward the ocean, and in that moment, Busovni says, something clicked, and I was hooked ever since. When volunteers find a nest, the first thing they do is dig by hand to make sure there are actually eggs buried in the sand. It really is a miracle to think that in the sand, all this development is going on and all this new life is being created, she says. While that first nest was meaningful to Busovni, her best memory in nearly a quarter century of working with PISTP happened in 2009 when she was volunteer coordinator. At about 3 o'clock one morning, her phone rang. It was a police officer who discovered something weird on the beach. A huge set of turtle tracks, larger than any he'd ever seen, and eggs laid sporadically over a wide swath of sand. Busovni went to check it out. Right away, she recognized the nest of a leatherback turtle, the largest sea turtle species in the world, measuring up to 6 feet long and weighing up to a ton. The eggs laid on top of the sand were probably yolkless spacer eggs, something that loggerheads and greens, the two more common species that nest in the area, don't do. This is the first leatherback nest recorded at Carolina Beach in more than 20 years. Rather than assigning a nest leader, Busovni decided to get everyone in the PISTP involved to monitor the nest around the clock. Every night after work, she sat watch for 3 or 4 hours. When the eggs began to hatch, the call made its way down the PISTP phone tree, and more than 100 volunteers arrived to greet the leatherback babies. As the hatchlings emerged, Busovni sobbed tears of joy. It was the most beautiful thing, she says. These leatherbacks, they come out really slowly. They're about the size of my fist, and they just unfurl their long flippers. It's almost like a ballet. The experience was particularly special for Busovni, who's loved the ocean since childhood. The smell of the salt, the sea creatures that live in it, the legends and the ghost stories. Analyzing things I found on the beach, all of it was fascinating, she says. As a child, I wanted to work with Jacques Cousteau and travel the world on one of his research vessels and study marine creatures. Busovni feels she was born with a drive to do the environmental work. Growing up in South Carolina, she enjoyed watching Flipper and reading Ranger Rick magazine. When she was about 7, she organized a trash pickup for the neighborhood kids. As an adult living in Carolina Beach, she once climbed a scrub oak behind her house and refused to come down until she received a written statement from a developer that the tree would not be felled. But years earlier, when it came time to pick a college major, her parents had talked her into studying accounting because they thought it was more practical than marine biology. Now, Busovni sees her work with these sea turtles and passing her passion on to new volunteers as an opportunity to live out a lifelong dream. The PISTP has grown from a dozen volunteers in 2001 to about 250 volunteers today. Busovni shows newcomers the ropes, how to dig for eggs, how to stake off a nest and lay a fox cage to ward off predators, how to set up black silt fencing to guide hatchlings to the water. On Friday mornings, Busovni starts her patrol at the Ocean Boulevard access in Carolina Beach and hikes north for a mile before turning back at Atlanta Avenue. If she spots the telltale tracks of a mother turtle, they look like tractor tire marks leading inland from the crashing waves, she'll spring into action to protect the nest. Walking the beach this Friday with fellow volunteer Debbie Donnelly, Busovni gets word that a nest has been found farther north. While Donnelly continues to patrol, Busovni heads up to the nest. There's plenty of work to do. First up is digging for eggs. The purpose is twofold: to verify that there are eggs in the nest and to collect a shell for DNA testing, allowing the PISTP to track which turtles are nesting on which beaches. Busovni shows the newer volunteers how to find the eggs, pointing out a small mound of sand that the mother turtle threw up on top of them. The group gets to work. They dig with their hands, as shovels could damage the fragile shells. It's the best feeling in the world when you're over that egg chamber. The sand will get really soft and kind of sink beneath your hand, and you know you're close, she says. Then you gently go a little bit further, and you can feel the eggs. Hunting for eggs is my very favorite thing to do. The volunteers retrieve an egg for testing, then recover the rest with sand. Busovny demonstrates how to lay a fox cage, a sheet of orange plastic mesh, to protect the nest from predators like foxes and coyotes, and how to stake it off to mark its location and prevent beachgoers from disturbing it. When it's nearly time for a boil, volunteers will create a corridor out of black silt fencing to guide the hatchlings to the water, as lights left on at beach properties can lure them away from the surf. The number of nests the volunteers find each year varies, but they've seen increases from 7 or 8 in the PISTP's infancy to about 20 in the past couple of years. For loggerhead and green turtles, whose populations are listed as threatened in this part of the Atlantic, every nest counts. These creatures are ancient. They've survived many extinctions. They've been around longer than a lot of the animals on the planet. And that's got to be for a reason, Busovny says. They're beautiful, wise, old souls. And it's an honor that they're choosing our beach to come and lay their precious eggs. Since her days of ardently monitoring nests, Busovny has handed off the task to other volunteers, favoring early morning patrols instead. Working with the turtles has given her a deep sense of purpose. Now I'm honored to spread that purpose to the next generation, she says. I want to see people get that feeling like I got when I first started doing it the first time. Her leadership role with the PISTP also gave her the confidence to start her own business. Through Coconut Jack's tours, she leads kayak trips to Sharktooth Island and down the Black River, as well as paddleboat tours along the canal at Carolina Beach. It made me believe in myself and realize that I can do anything I set my mind to, she says. And the fulfillment that comes from knowing you're taking an active role in saving a threatened species, it's a pretty big deal. And we're doing it out there, and it's a privilege to get to do it. Sometimes it rains, sometimes it shines. Sometimes Busovny finds a nest, sometimes she doesn't. She takes the ups with the downs. The knowledge that she's supporting the survival of these ancient threatened species keeps her coming back. All right, moving on to Hooks and Hardware. That's the third article in the series about Carolina Beach's centennial. At a coastal general store, locals and vacationers find just what they need to repair a house, maintain a boat, catch a fish, and much, much more. Wes Barber calls out hurricane names like he's listing relatives. Bertha, Fran, Bonnie, Floyd, Florence, Ian. Stormy weather is a fact of life on the coast, but the Barber family makes it standard practice not to evacuate. Instead, they keep their store, Island True Value Tackle and Hardware, open as long as possible, even as the winds kick up and the rains arrive, giving Carolina Beach locals a last chance for generator plugs, nails, batteries, sandbags, anything they'll need to shelter in place. When the store does shut down, Wes and his wife, Griffin, make the one-mile drive to their house, built of brick and concrete blocks and topped with a metal roof, and they wait. Once the weather clears, they head back to the store, crank up a generator, and reopen. Soon, the beach residents who've ridden out the hurricane show up for tarps, brooms, buckets, and cleaning supplies. We just try to be there for the community as long as we can be, Griffin says. We're usually the last people to close before a storm and the first people to open after a storm. Following Hurricane Florence's devastating winds and flood in September of 2018, the store stayed closed for most of a week before reopening on limited power. The store runs on a backup generator that can only power half the lights, Griffin says, but we were there for anything that anybody needed. Wes calls the Florence experience a blur. It lasted way longer than we really anticipated. He's proud the store soon got back to business to help with the recovery. We really hunkered down and we were there, he said. Those times bring the community together. Every year we get the threat of a tropical storm and I tell my guys, now's our time. This is a fire drill. We're going to prep for a major hurricane coming. Island Tackle and Hardware has been a true family business since the Barbers bought it 25 years ago. In 2000, Wes's parents, Dennis and Wanda, sat him down for a series of family talks. They were thinking ahead, considering what to do after Dennis's eventual retirement from his management career. They showed Wes a business plan and pictures of a local hardware store that also sold fishing gear. A friend had opened the place in 1985, and now they had a chance to buy it. We haven't committed to it yet, Dennis said. We want to know what you think. Wes was 14 years old. He loved fishing. Awesome, he said. Fishing stuff, that'd be cool. So the vote was unanimous and the Barbers went for it. Wanda left her job as an elementary school teacher's assistant to work at the store. And for 5 years until retirement, Dennis put in hours outside of his full-time job and his duties as mayor of Carolina Beach. Today, the Barbers are still selling fishing stuff and plenty of other stuff at Island Tackle and Hardware. Their store has become an institution in Carolina Beach, a decades-old family-run business on the main drag, Lake Park Boulevard. As his parents' first hire, Wes spent his spare time working there through high school and during summers in college. Now, 39, he and Griffin, 35, have taken over the operation and management as the next generation to run the business. The idea, Wes says, was to have a place where people really didn't have to leave the island, a general store to encompass anything you could need. Wes emerges from the store's warehouse, where among his countless duties at work, he repairs trolling motors. He wears a black cap carrying the Island Tackle Hardware logo, the company's initials, surrounding a hammer crossed over a rod and wheat reel. He moves through the store with the familiar ease of a young man who's covered these aisles for more than half his life. The short walk from the retail floor to the business office takes him past shelves of mosquito repellent and paint cans, chisels and tape measures, drink coolers, swimming goggles, and a board game called Carolina Beachopoly. A display features books on North Carolina shipwrecks and legends of the Cape Fear coast. Outsized customers pull up into the parking lot to load up on propane, ice, mulch, and rock salt. Much of it, the thousands of products from bird seed to potting mix to screwdrivers to wiffle balls, is here because customers asked for it. We had a clipboard, Dennis says of the early days. If someone asks for an item and we didn't have it, we wrote it down. If you had two or three requests for the same item, then that kind of sparked us. Maybe we need to put it in the inventory as a full-time stock item. The original store had just two aisles of fishing gear, but Dennis and Wes, both certified charter boat captains, decided they needed much more. In 2008, the Barbers doubled the size of the store to 12,000 square feet and dedicated nearly half the space to fishing. Customers even have a choice of two front doors, one for the hardware side and one for the fishing. A chalkboard lists the day's high and low temperatures, wind speed and direction, tide times, and sea swells. The store's employees regularly answer long-distance calls from people asking the same question. Hey, what's the weather doing down there? Even though the callers, wherever they are, have weather apps and constant forecast updates, they'd rather hear about the conditions on Pleasure Island from someone who's actually on the island. They want to get the subclimate of what's going on here and what fish are biting, Wes says. We've always tried to be the 411 of Carolina Beach, whether it be tide, weather, or events going on in the community. They call about anything and everything. The store sells rods and reels, nets, live bait, lures, fishing charts, rope ladders, and anything else someone might need to angle for the catch of the day. The walls pay tribute to the deep fishing tradition in Carolina Beach. Photos of proud crews with their catch, award plaques from fishing contests, the giant billfish caught during marlin tournaments. Upstairs, clothing manager Teresa Ivy proudly shows off the store's very big attraction, a 15-foot, 8-inch, 1,228-pound blue marlin that arcs over the dressing rooms. Wanda and Dennis have fully retired now. though Dennis still charters his boat for fishing trips. They've turned over tackle, island tackle, and hardware to Wes and Griffin, who sometimes work 60 hours a week as they manage 17 employees during the store's 15 hours of daily operations. They truly seem to love it, Wanda says. They work together on everything, and that's what it takes. It's just like building a strong marriage, a strong family. They put that into the business. They found a way, just like Dennis and I did. Dennis says with Wes and Griffin understand the next wave of customers, a younger generation. And he says Griffin, who has a degree in psychology, didn't grow up in the hardware business, has been a quick study. She's never rebuilt a toilet, he says, but she could probably tell you how. Wes sees the store as an opportunity and a commitment to serve the place where he grew up. That's really our drive, he explains. I feel an obligation to be here when the people need us. That's the ultimate goal, to leave your lasting legacy on the community. I don't see our store going anywhere anytime. So hopefully we'll be a lasting legacy for generations to come. Island True Value Tackle and Hardware is located on North Lake Park Boulevard at Carolina Beach. And you can check out their website at islandtruevalue.com. And the last of the articles about Carolina Beach. Coastal Comfort. A family honors the memory of their patriarch through the restaurant he founded and his award-winning seafood chowder. The most important dish at Michael's Seafood, seafood chowder, is highlighted prominently in a bright yellow box at the top of the menu. In the same way, the most important thing about the restaurant, the McGowan family, is pictured framed in gold next to the host stand, the first thing patrons see when they arrive. The beachfront portrait is the type of beaming photo you might expect to see hanging over the mantle in a family's home. In a way, it is. This restaurant, founded by Michael and Shelley McGowan in 1998, predates both of their sons and has served as a backdrop for their lives. Once we had our boys, they were part of the daily grind with us, Shelley recalls. Not only them, but the other young families that worked at the restaurant. I have great memories of setting up video games and having dance parties and movie nights for all the kids at the restaurant while the parents were working. To a casual observer, say one of the countless tourists who've driven 5 minutes up the road from Carolina Beach Boardwalk each summer, Michael's Seafood might look like a typical tropical-themed restaurant, but quickly it becomes clear there's a deeper purpose here. For starters, nothing on the menu is fried, a practically sacrilegious approach to seafood on this state's coast, and one that still causes the occasional diner to turn on their heels. But there's also the black bench outside the front door, dedicated in loving memory of Michael McGowan, a plaque by the bathrooms honoring local soccer coaches who embody his ethos, and on the tableside napkin dispensers, an obituary of sorts explaining Michael's legacy of service. Michael had already been diagnosed with cystic fibrosis when he and Shelley met while working at a country club in Pennsylvania. At first, he thought she was a bit too young and bossy. She says, we had a bit of disagreement for a month or two, but eventually we fell in love. It was easy to do. The next year, they got married on a snowy November day, holding the wedding reception at work. 2 years later, they opened a restaurant on the North Carolina coast where they hoped the salt air would be good for Michael's health. I always tell people that he knew he wasn't going to live to be an old man, so he truly experienced life the way people should, Shelley says. He actually taught me so much about living life to the fullest. When Michael's Seafood first opened in a much smaller storefront, the kitchen lacked a deep fryer. That didn't bother Michael. He embraced it. The McGowan's eldest son, Dylan, recalls that his dad was health conscious, down to the food he served in the restaurant. He already had a strong belief of not dunking a fish in a fryer and taking away the taste of it, Dylan says. It was something that made us stand out. Instead, Michael developed a seafood chowder recipe that would serve as a year-round staple to draw people in. The recipe, which includes clams, scallops, and crab meat, as well as potatoes and vegetables in a creamy base, hasn't changed. And it's become the restaurant's calling card. The rich chowder is so good that the McGowans were able to march into Newport, Rhode Island, the birthplace of chowder, and win first place in the Great Chowder Cook-Off 3 years in a row before being retired to a newly created Hall of Fame designed to give someone else a chance at the title. The following year, 2012, Michael died due to complications from cystic fibrosis. Since then, much has changed at the restaurant that bears his name. With Shelley at the helm, Michael's Seafood underwent a significant renovation and refresh a few years later, embracing a more playful tropical theme complete with a palm thatch roof over the tables. The acclaimed chowder now ships directly to customers nationwide and is available at Harris Teeter and other stores. Dylan, now 23, is a managing partner in the business, having worked every station and job since he first started bussing tables at around age 10. And yet Michael has remained at the heart of this place that's been around almost as long without him. Sitting in one of the restaurant's booths, Dylan clasps his hands on the table in front of him. He was 10 when Michael died, but he remembers plenty about his dad, a great chef who could be stern but also fun, the face of the family's restaurant who is well known in the community, a devoted soccer coach who loved working with kids. More than anything, Dylan says, he wants people to know that the family is still fighting for a cure for cystic fibrosis. They hold an annual golf tournament to raise money for the cause and participate in other fundraisers. The signs are all over the restaurant, including a surfboard painted with a blue 65 and surrounded by red roses. A laminated page explains that children with the disease have an easier time pronouncing 65 roses, and then synonym stuck. Support for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, among many other initiatives to give back, has always been one of Michael's defining efforts, too. Dylan originally aspired to enter the medical field to work on finding a cure himself, but as he got older, he fell in love with the restaurant and its predictable unpredictability. "My mom had really tried to push me away from it, actually," he says. "She'd seen it for over 25 years, and she's like, 'I know what goes into this. You do not want to do this. It's a lot.' But she saw for herself that I was really enjoying it and wanted to be a part of it." Dylan is young. At least he's young compared to the regulars at Michael's Seafood, who are mostly of his parents' or grandparents' generation. He's young compared to the music playing, which this day rotates between the Beatles, Phil Collins, Fleetwood Mac, and Journey. And he's young compared to the restaurant itself. But despite his boyish face, Dylan exudes the seriousness and confidence of a business owner. His clock ticks in time with this place. Last year, he convinced his mother to modernize and adopt a new point-of-sale system. At first wary of the kitchen, he's now mastered every station, especially drawn to the speed and interactive nature of Sauté. That is, in many ways, his house. Walking through the restaurant's bar area, he chats with regulars, demonstrating the kind of comfort and familiarity that's only earned with time. One couple at the bar, Bob and Vicky Young, have watched Dylan and his brother Davis grow up in that space. Having first visited the restaurant as tourists from Atlanta more than 20 years ago, the Youngs moved a few miles away and now come in a few times each week during the off-season, and a little less often when there's a wait for tables in the summer. They're devout fans, even though Vicky's allergic to fish. "The food is consistently excellent," she says, adding that she alternates between a burger and salad. "The staff stays the same, and they all care about our service. I would say it's the best food on the beach, maybe even further in." Her husband nods. "We've come to know these people. Over the years, he's done odd jobs for the restaurant. They're part of what Shelley calls the Michael's Seafood family." The Youngs return to Michael's Seafood as reliably as the crowds who flock to town each summer, and despite its earth-shaking loss of Michael, the McGowan family has found a way to offer consistency, too, honoring what makes the restaurant special while leaving themselves room to grow. They're located on North Lake Park Boulevard in Carolina Beach, and mikesseafood.com. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org.